With Metro by T-Mobile, your hard-earned money goes further. This tax season, there's zero fees to switch. Enjoy Metro's lowest price. Just $25 a line for 4 lines. Plus, get 4 free Samsung Galaxy phones when you switch. Now that's the best deal in wireless. Metro by T-Mobile, empowering you to rule your day. All lines lose promo rate if any deactivates. No fees on select phones. Limit 1 per line with eligible port. Excludes sales tax. Limited time offer. Additional terms apply. See MetroByT-Mobile.com.
Welcome to this edition of Smart to Death here on Shooting the Sports-ish. This is Spring Break Tony, and next to me I have Tom.
If you still a winner.
Yeah, check it out. Like, this is, you see this, guys? Sun's out, guns out. You see those 22-inch pythons here? 22-centimeter pythons? Baby, it's fucking spring break here in Texas. Last week, it was hockey season. Today, it's golf season. I should have shown up and just had my driver with the club head on, like, and just recorded.
Your golf club on your hand the whole time and walked in. Hey,
like, do you understand that it was literally -1 degrees this day last week, and we had, like, we didn't know if we were going to run out of power and brisket.
I'm still living it, so yeah, not the power part, but just the degree part. Yeah,
it's the craziest thing, guys. Let's watch the Smart to Death intro video. Let's watch the Shooting the Sports Dish bumper. We got some wrestling to talk about. All right, guys. Again, we have Tom here from Wrestling News World and Shooting the Sports Dish. Obviously, we're both here. If you could, check out shootingthesportsdish.com. Follow us on all of our social media platforms. We would appreciate that. If you were on listening on audio, thank you. We're trying to make a big push for audio here. So if you could, make sure you give us a 5-star Frog Splash rating and review down there below. Check out all of our great shows, our YouTube, our TikTok now. We're there as well. Everything is Shoot Sports-ish. You can follow there. So let's get into first. We have the Exploding Death Match that we talked about last week, the Exploding Barbed Wire Death Match. And hopefully this video stays on the YouTube portion. But Tom and I are very impressed by a video AEW released for the next chapter in Moxley versus Omega, which, before we get into this, I think what they're kind of going for here, man, is are they just trying to make this like AEW's version of what Okada and Omega had in New Japan? Because that's kind of where it feels for me. Not the same quality. Please don't think that I'm saying it's the same quality, but I think that they're trying to make it like these are the two best in the company and the two biggest rivals.
I just think they're telling traditional professional wrestling stories of these are the two best guys in the company. We're going to have this program weave in and out for a year or so. I kind of think that's where they're going with. I believe Kenny called it the Extermination Chamber. As far as
they were working on the Extermination Chamber tonight.
So, I mean, again, it'll be interesting, as we mentioned. It's all about the build, though. So you've got next week to continue to build it. This promo video you're about to show, I think, does a tremendous job more than anything else they've done.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, like, they have the benefit with what they're doing here with these guys that, how much do you really need to make people excited for Moxley versus Omega? If you liked it the first time, you're going to like it this time, too. So let's go ahead and get into this video. We're going to share it here. Let me pull off the branding so y'all can see this. Again, if you're listening on audio, you're going to hear the video. You won't be able to see it, but hopefully the video doesn't take us down. We were there.
You were at that show, huh? Yeah, this guy too, yeah. By the way, still one of the coolest sets I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, hell yeah. That was sick. God, I forgot about it. They've had a great feud.
I mean, we're going on, what, 16 months?
Something like that, yeah. I'm hoping the audio's come across. Or else this is really awkward.
They'll make it challenging for the match.
I like the fucking champ, by the way. I love the champ actually challenging the challenger. Like, it's a nice little spin.
Well, I mean, look, he was handed the papers and he picked the match, and here's where we are.
Yeah.
Kenny Omega Moxley exploding ring barbed wire death match.
Yeah, I'm pretty hyped for this match. I think it's going to be great. I just want to talk about that promo video. They're doing a good job building it. They're building it pretty quick. I mean, Revolution's in 2 weeks. And so let's talk about some things that are shaping out here in the card. No audio, said Alex Thomas. So sorry, guys, for the no audio. We provided some commentary, though. So, you know what? That actually keeps us from getting pulled off YouTube anyway. So it kind of works out.
Right.
But we saw the promo video. Everybody wins. Everybody dies. Yeah. So tonight we had Lance Archer defeating Phoenix in, I thought, an absolutely excellent main event match. I thought Phoenix versus Lance Archer was great. Lance Archer works so very, very well with little dudes. And Phoenix is, I mean, people don't forget this now, but Phoenix is one of the best wrestlers in the world. And this match I thought was really good. Lance Archer is now added into the ladder match. So we have Archer, Cody, Scorpio Sky, and Penta. And I feel things. I've got 22 centimeters somewhere else, if you know what I mean.
20. Look, I agree with you. I think that Lance with smaller talent has always been very good. It's always been one of his strengths. There is some big men who can't have good matches with smaller guys. It's just reality. It's not his reality. As always, I get concerned that Phoenix is going to seriously hurt himself, but was it an entertaining match? It sure was. And Lance Archer moves on in that match.
Yeah. Yeah. He moves on in the match. It was a good match. And we're starting to see this card take shape now. And so far with what they have on Revolution, I think that they actually have a pretty good, thing going here. They're just going to start selling tickets here. Tickets are $40 a piece, which is nice. We're starting to see the build. They did a great job tonight also building, and we'll talk about Revolution build first. The Bucks versus Jericho and MJF has picked up some steam here with Jericho and MJF bloodying up Papa Buck and having to get him sent over to the emergency room. Some good old traditional wrestling heat. Like you had the old school style heels getting old school style heat, and they really are doing a good job building this match. I swear to God, do not put a fucking gimmick on this match because there are plenty of gimmick matches on this card. Like, let me just have Jericho and MJF working heel against high flying Bucks.
You're not getting a gimmick on this one. I think this is going to be Jericho's opportunity to show people I can still go in the ring. And because it's with the Bucks, he's pretty much going to want to put himself on that playing field of, can I still do this in a ring with those guys at that pacing? I think it'll be super interesting too for MJF, who doesn't work a ton of tag matches, of how it's going to work out with him and Jericho in a tag match under the idea of, all right, we have to be a cohesive team back and forth.
Yes. Yes. I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be a good match. The Bucks tell good stories in the ring now, despite what everybody else would think. But there are some nice, I think it'll be a good match. I think they're building that out well. We also see here, and I'm looking at the AEW Twitter as I go through to see what other matches I lost because my brain is kind of right now. We know that we're getting some stakes here in Hangman versus Big Money Matt. That's happening now. Finally, we're getting some there. He's going to take out members of the Dark Order. He's going to take out members of the Dark Order to try to make Hangman upset. And there's some nice storyline elements there. Surely this is the first match on the path to Hangman taking the title from Kenny, because it certainly feels that way. You still there? Did I lose you?
It has to, right? This has to be the time that we're going to give Paige the big push. He needs to go over Matt clean. He needs to go over Matt strong. And then they need to set up his next competitor on that quest. I don't think he's going to get to Kenny for another 8 months or so, the way they book, and that's okay. But you have to keep him strong, right? You've got to find competition for him.
Yep. No, for sure. Let's move on from, before we move on from AEW, we'll talk about it at the end. Let's talk about the big news that dropped today at the end. We will also talk about, let's go on to Elimination Chamber here. Elimination Chamber, what'd you think about the show?
Well, I think anytime we get an elimination chamber, you know what you're going in for, right? You're going to get two matches. That's kind of it. A lot of filler in the middle, right? So we got our two chamber matches. I thought both chamber matches were built very well. I thought each total story, each put a lot of different guys over as far as pinfalls go. Everybody got some room to shine, right? I would have preferred Brian not losing to Roman as quickly as he did after that match, but I understand the idea behind it, so I'm not really super hurt behind it. And look, coming out of it, we have a new champion. Tony, what are your thoughts on The Miz being champion in 2021?
I love The Miz. I'm just going to be honest with you. I love The Miz. I think The Miz has done a lot for WWE. I think it's been a long time between his last championship run and this one. And let's take The Miz's name off of this. Let's take the idea of the briefcase cash-in being successful. Was it going like it has not been successful very often, right? So the briefcase has been devalued over the last few years because cash-ins were failing. We had the really great Bayley cash-in 2 years ago, and now it seemed like everybody was losing for a while, right? Like Shinsuke lost. Who else had got the briefcase that lost? Whatever. We've seen a lot of failed cash-ins. It seems like every time you get the briefcase, we're just waiting for it to be a failed cash-in. And so Otis loses, wins. He was going to fail the cash-in. They transition over to The Miz.
Look, Miz failed the first time he tried to cash in.
Right. And so it is nice to see The Miz as champion. I love The Miz. Pills in Ibiza says that he's seen me on a TV show before. I don't think that's true, but I wish it was. Anyway, I love The Miz's champ. I think Miz being champ is great. I think he's a good character. I think he's a decent enough worker. And, you know, he's done a shit ton for the WWE. It's about time to me. Shinsuke was the Rumble. Thank you. I'm so sorry, Augie. Yes, Shinsuke was Rumble, Asuka Rumble, same night. Corbin blew it recently.
I think they were trying to tell their story, Tone. I mean, their story was, we're going to have Drew Chase going into WrestleMania. That's our story. Whether the belt ends up on Lashley, like many predict it will, and we have Drew Lashley at Mania, Vince's idea, or WWE's idea, I should say, was this is the first ticketed show back. We need a babyface to win the title because odds are Edge probably isn't beating Roman.
Right. That's a good point. That's a really good point. You don't want your Mania to end with all baby faces losing. You definitely don't want that. I agree with you completely. It is not something that you want to do. Because it just leaves, like, we had that Mania, 2-3 years ago where all the heels won, and it just leaves a sour taste in your mouth. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I think they just want to tell their story. I like The Miz. I like The Miz a whole lot. It was exciting to see a cash in. I thought it was a lot of fun. Our boy Tanner absolutely called it, and I thought that was pretty fun. I thought it was funny he called it.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't shock me too much. Did it shock you when Bobby came out and started beating up Drew?
No.
So, I mean, here we are. It told the story they want to tell, and they have a pay-per-view in between they have to get through.
Brian says that Miz needs to stay heel. Outstanding promo to help push Mania. Yes, that's another thing, too, is, like, Drew's not a great talker. Anyone he was going to feud with wasn't going to be a great talker. Lashley versus McIntyre wasn't going to be a talking kind of feud. MVP could talk a little, but, I mean, at least if Miz stays in the picture, then Miz can, like, you're going to get a triple threat most likely between those three. I would assume that's what you get. Or if Miz is still involved and it's Miz versus McIntyre, then you get Miz can still be involved and push this feud somehow, some way, I would think.
I think the only way you're getting a three-way if it's at the next pay-per-view, like example, next week during the Miz Bobby match, Drew comes out, cost Bobby the match, beats the hell out of him, then beats the hell out of Miz. You set up the three-way at the next pay-per-view. Lashley still wins. And then you go to Drew Lashley, I think.
I kind of dig that. I'm not sure where they're going to go with it, to be honest with you. I'm kind of a fan.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, I know where their end point is. I just don't know how they're getting there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, my assumption is that McIntyre is winning the belt back at Mania, and that he will actually get to win in front of a crowd, and then we'll get to see live crowd McIntyre. That's my guess. Do you think I'm off base there?
No, it's what they want, man. It is what they want. I don't think they take the title off of him in these circumstances if we weren't getting fans returning. I just think he goes on, does his normal thing, beats up Lashley, bada bing, bada boom.
So we have Miz versus Lashley next week. Is Miz winning this match? How do you see that going? I assume Lashley's winning in a squash.
I have Drew coming down again and beating up Lashley, who cost him his title, and then beating the hell out of the Miz, who took his title, leaving both men laying there at the end of the show to set up some version of a triple threat, at which point Lashley needs to cash in. Now, that being said, the WWE has not changed their world title on Raw in a long time.
Yep.
And it wouldn't shock me if they did it. It would not shock me at all.
Yeah. No, they've got to do something different here because we are about to get back into fans again. We talked about this the first week back. We talked about it a little bit last week. We are getting back into the fan era. And so something has to be done to energize fans to think, okay, maybe it is worth it to go to Raw during a pandemic to go see wrestling. Like maybe it's worth it to go because you don't know what's going to happen.
It's even to the point though, man, where even if they're doing, let's say, a monthly pay-per-view outside of wherever they're having Thunderdome at that particular month, week, season, it's to your exact point though. What are we offering them to get them to take chances and leave? Because again, there is people that are stir crazy that just want to get the hell out and go somewhere. I get that. But there's a whole another demographic of people that unless you're giving them something to get them out, they're not going just because WWE's in town.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of WWE being in town, let's move on to the next topic here. But before we do, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Podgo. That's podgo.co/NBA for this promo code. It's the last week of it. You can get up to 75% off. The NBA is where amazing happens, where unpredictable happens, where Luka hitting back-to-back threes, one go-ahead, one game winner last night in a fucking awesome game. You can do that at podgo.co/NBA. Get up to 75% off on your gear. You may not be able to go to the arenas yet, but you can wear gear at home and watch the game at home and maybe hang out with Fenton and I next time we do a live betting bang and check that out. So again, podgo.co/NBA, 75% off. Do it now, do it hard, do it really fast because the promo ends on the 17th or 28th. God, Jesus, I can't speak. WWE is in town with their largest performance center signing class of all time. We had Bronson Reichster, who is the son of Rick Steiner and nephew of Scott Steiner. So we got one of the families here. Taya Valkyrie, whose real name is Kira Magnan Forster. I'm assuming Taya, since she was announced as Taya Valkyrie, she owns that name, I'm guessing.
She owns Taya Valkyrie, yeah.
That's what I figured. Okay. So Taya Valkyrie is in this class, which is a huge deal and a duh one. Parker Bordeaux, who was all over the place. LA Knight, which is Eli Drake. AQA, Angela Arnold, who I'm not familiar with, but she was in Shimmer and trained under Booker T. Anthony Henry, who is a huge star from Evolve. Harlem Bravado, which he worked in Evolve, WWN, TNA, and Ring of Honor. Zoe Stark, who was formerly Theresa Serrano. She made her debut tonight, and she is facing Io Shirai in a non-title match. Actually, she did that tonight. I'm sorry. Christian Casanova, who is a really big name. Gigi Dolin, which is Priscilla Kelly. Everybody knows Priscilla Kelly for the tampon spot. Cora Jade. She was in a tag tournament. She was squashed by Zia Lee recently. Blake Christian or Christian Hubble, which we both know you've dealt with and I've interviewed. Blake Christian's awesome. I hope he gets a lot of time there. Carissa Rivera, Drew Casper, Matrick Belton, Cameron Clay, Joe Areola, Taylor Grado. The big names here are Parker Bordeaux, Taya Valkyrie, Blake Christian, Christian Casanova. What are your thoughts on this class?
I think for a while. For a while, I've said, like, the WWE is going to lock down talent. It's time to move forward. It's time to scoop up people from a business sense that may cost you more later, right?
Right.
So they're continuing that train of picking up these guys 2 to 3 years before they used to, in most cases, a little later in some, but 2 to 3 years more often than not than they were before, and now they have them there. I don't think it's a thing of hoarding talent. I think it's more or less, hey, we like what they have to offer. We'd like to bring them in, and that's okay.
Right.
My only caveat to this is I just hope it doesn't end up with many people signed there that don't even get to experience being on NXT TV, let alone moving up the roster. Because, again, we're getting to the point where you're doing 24-person classes. There's a real possibility you're not getting up.
Well, here's the thing. That's exactly what's going to happen. I mean, let's just be real here. You look at this class and obviously Eli Drake to LA Knight. I don't want to say he's a big signing because I don't care for him very much. And LA Knight's a stupid name. Parker Bordeaux is going to spend as little time as possible in the performance center. Once he's ready to go, he's moving up. Dude's massive. He looks like a mini Brock.
He's got to learn how to wrestle though.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying to expect him this year. I'm saying he will be moved up as soon as he's not super green. If that's a year or 2 years, he's going to get a Braun Strowman kind of jab pushed up real fast. Taya Valkyrie is probably never going to work NXT. She probably just won't be on TV until she finds out how the cameras work in the WWE. La Huera Loca, I'm very excited for Taya. I think the women's division in WWE just keeps getting richer, and Taya is a phenomenal talent. She's a great character, a great talker, a great wrestler, and now we get to see her without hokey, cheesy Impact promos. Oh, it's going to be good stuff.
The other thing, the other really cool part about Taya coming in too, is she brings a different dynamic than some of the other women have in WWE.
Such a different woman.
So it's going to be great to see that contrast, because a lot of people aren't a fan of the fact that they can put 5 or 6 WWE women in a room, not look-wise, but wrestling-wise, and they all wrestle the same way because that's how they're trained. Whereas Taya is completely different, and it's going to be super cool. And I will say this, though. I think she's going to catch some women who, after she works them, are going to go to the back and go, I need to get on my stuff. I really strongly believe that.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think Taya is great. Christian Casanova, who is starting to get a pretty big name here, he'll be in NXT for a while. Priscilla Kelly is another really good worker who worked the Women's Dusty Cup. It was always a matter of time before she finally was going to be on the NXT roster.
Sure.
I think that she will do fine. I think she'll spend some time on NXT. And Blake Christian, I'm worried about our guy Blake. I think Blake will be fine in NXT. I just don't know if there's a future for him on main roster, but being on NXT is not bad. I mean, that's he's going to get TV time. I think he'll be working on TV fairly soon. I mean, well, I don't know. Zayn hasn't even debuted yet, but those two guys have to learn TV too, though. They were on GCW. That's so much to learn with TV.
It's so different. You take two guys that worked as the Rascals in Impact, right? The transition is going to be quicker due to the fact that you've done TV. It's not to say Alex didn't work New Japan, or it's not to say Blake didn't work Impact.
New Japan cameras are so different, though.
But that's what I'm saying. How long were the Rascals working Impact, taping after taping after taping after taping?
Right.
It's easier to say, hey, we'll gamble on this because they know X, Y, and Z, versus, hey, we don't want you to fail, so we're going to have you here for a little bit. So I understand that, too.
Yeah. And Blake is a very, very good talent. He's super young too, so there's plenty of time to go. Eli Drake will get plenty of time. Eli Drake will probably, I don't think he'll ever leave NXT, just because I don't think there's a place for him on main roster. I don't really think that we talked about Eli Drake. We don't need to talk about him anymore. I don't want to.
Oh, we're all good.
I mean, do you?
we can move on to the rest of the class. I mean, I think Anthony Henry's going to be a superstar. Oh, yes.
Anthony Henry, I think so too. Anthony Henry will be a really good one as well. Zoe Stark, people were very impressed with her tonight too. The Twitter sphere.
Yeah, she actually debuted. Yeah, I think she debuted last week. Almost playing that role of we don't know who she is kind of person, and went in there and beat somebody up. And tonight we got more of the background story of her. And again, like you had mentioned, they have different roles for people. She came right in from the class and got on TV. Everyone's going to be different, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Triple H commented about him being excited about Parker Bordeaux and Bronson Rick Steiner. Those are the two that he mentioned by name on the call today when they announced the class. So those are names that you can assume will be on TV pretty quick. There is a fallen from grace wrestler that made an appearance there at, apparently there might be a little flirting going on between a certain villain who actually is kind of a villain after being a face. I don't know. Marty Scurll was apparently spotted backstage in New Japan. There might be some flirting on there. I'm not surprised by the company that's interested.
News to Tony, he shot an angle there too. It wasn't just he was there.
Yes, yeah, he it was Rocky Romero he shot the angle with, right? So he's working New Japan. Here's the thing, okay? Like, I'm going to talk about this from a business standpoint. Like, I'm going to take my emotions away from it, right? I understand to an extent why New Japan would be okay with it. Would I be okay with it if I was making the call? No. No, I wouldn't. I don't care what the circumstances are of the situation that he was in. What's up, Noob & Co? Thanks for joining, my friend. I wouldn't be okay with it if I was making the calls, but I'm not. What I'm confused about is that New Japan is trying to work in America and they still don't understand that this is not going to go over well in the United States. It's not. You can get away with that in Japan because the culture is so different, but here it's not going to go over well here because the only people watching your US show are hardcore fans who fucking hate that guy and don't want him on the screen. It's a really tone deaf move to me.
I look at it from many different ways, right? Many sure. different stretches of how I view his situation versus others, how sure. I view how things happened. And again, not condoning anything at all. I just have to take it all in if I'm giving a theory of what I think is going to happen. I'll look at it this way, right? Rocky is super close with Gallus and Anderson, right? Super close with them. Yeah. They're obviously going to work New Japan when the pandemic's over. It was always part of their deal with Impact anyway, right? Yeah. My thought process behind this is it begins to start opening the door for that type of working relationship too, where if, for example, they don't catch a ton of flack, you're going to have other companies jump on top of using him. Make no doubt about it. The real question is who's going to be the one that takes the hit?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he'll go... I am not a fan of him signing. As Brian K says, he had to believe somebody was going to give him another chance though, but it's very risky. Yes. Someone, Marty is the one that people are going to, like you knew the day that the news broke about him and you found out the story because it's so gray that someone was going to be going to give him another chance, but you knew it wasn't AEW or WWE first. You knew those two weren't going to play ball and they might play ball eventually, but those two, you better believe it. They have a deal ready for him if the PR is not terrible.
And you'd mentioned, right, that he was flirting with New Japan, right? It obviously, we know it's past flirting at this point.
Right.
But he's also flirted with AEW. He's flirted with the PC. Like,
right.
These aren't things we didn't see coming. We knew at some point somebody was going to take the gamble. The question was when and who. And apparently it's US and New Japan. I will say this. I'm more surprised, however, that it's not in Japan.
Does that make sense to you? Yes, I 100% agree. Because Michael Elgin was working New Japan before, and his past is fucking terrible. He's a terrible human being, but he got away with it in Japan because Japan doesn't care. It's weird, but he didn't work any of the U.S. shows. And that, like, they knew that. So why is it that they knew this with Michael Elgin, but they didn't know it with Marty Scurll, that it might be a little tone deaf to have? Like, doesn't Rocky Romero understand that? Isn't he the guy that's in charge of New Japan US, or am I wrong?
I'm not saying you're right or wrong. I will say you're right on point with everything you just said. So it's probably a lot of his call. A lot of the talent booked is through him. A lot of the calls are through him, right?
Sure.
Completely in charge? Probably not. But yeah, to a certain extent, absolutely, you're right. But again, let's go back. And I hate to mix these two into this melting pot, but let's look at the talking shop style pay-per-views, right? Let's look at the humor on those type of things. I don't feel that among the among the stories and among the victims that leaked out, that those people among that area felt it was as big as some of the other ones.
And it's not. That's true. It's not. I mean, it still happened to me. I was talking with a buddy about this, and if you're listening to the show, bud, you know who you are. I'm not going to name him just for privacy purposes, which that person will be like, oh, wow, thanks, 2 years later. Anyway, we were talking about it, and I said, you know, I kind of understand it. Like, this guy makes me the least mad than if, like, Joey Ryan ever gets another booking, which is not going to happen. Like, Joey Ryan's never working in wrestling again. And we'll never miss him, because now that it's just creepy that he does dick flips, there's no reason for him to ever work another fucking wrestling show again. So who cares? But the Marty thing, I'm least upset about while still bothered by it. Like, I get it. I kind of don't care. I'm disappointed that it's in the US and not Japan. I don't know. It's just a lot. And like, for me, it's really upsetting and difficult to deal with, because I loved Marty Scurll. Like, I had Marty Scurll posters up here behind me. I had Marty Scurll socks, all the shit I got from Pro Wrestling Tees, minis. You also really like Marty Scurll. We talked about him all the time. I thought he was one of the best, most underrated workers in the world for a while. And those things are still true, but it's like, you know, it's like if I found out LeBron James was a kiddie diddler, I think my whole world and basketball fandom would fall apart.
Same situation?
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of the same.
Well, same exact situation. I'm asking if you're giving.
If it was that same situation
Marty was in.
Here's the deal. In the United States, we should all know. Okay, in Western countries, you should know that there are people that have fake IDs, and that if someone looks young and you're trying to fuck, like, this, just, like, I hate to be so blunt with it, but if Marty is no LeBron, Augie, but I'm just using, like, another crazy person, right? Like, but, like, Marty, it was someone that was known fairly well in the UK. Like, they know who these wrestlers are. He was pretty famous. You know, if you are someone with any kind of celebrity status, and you go into a bar and some girl is flirting with you and she looks young, something in your mind, unless you are pissed drunk, should tell you, she seems young. Like, she seems a little young. Maybe I should be careful with what I'm doing here. And I know he was, like, what, 21, 22? How old was he?
You're right in that time frame. I don't want to go deep into details, but yeah, right around there. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, like, in your mid-20s, you've been going to bars long enough now.
Early 20s.
Even
but
so,
again, the drinking age there is different too. That's why the ID part is even a bigger problem, though.
I don't know. You're
walking that line. You're not walking that line of legal age at 21. You're walking the drinking age at 18 there. So yes, right. To your point, Tone, those fake IDs there are probably 16, 17, as opposed to here where they may be 19 or 20, if that makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's even more risky. And you know that.
I absolutely agree with that point.
Yes. You know that's possible. I teach high school kids. They look fucking 13 to 18. Like, they look young. It is very obvious. None of them look like they could be in their 20s. Not a single one. You know, and you can tell by the way they speak. Like, 13 to 16 year olds speak a certain way, and you can tell because there's, like, this, they're, like, naive. And this is, like, a repeat of whenever this shit broke last year, because last summer I lost my damn mind about it. It's, like, part of what made me hate wrestling. But whatever.
Well, let's move on.
Marty might work New Japan. That's fine, I guess. Whatever. Kyle O'Reilly is supposedly out 4 to 6 weeks after an attack by Adam Cole. I assume this is a worked angle.
Yeah, what I think they're doing is they're trying to get to their next spot, which for them is going to be around, obviously, Mania season. So if you look at the time frame, it sets Kyle to come back right before Mania or right before TakeOver matches, not said show, because it'll be in three different parts and whatever. But I think it sends him back for that. So you can kind of make if it's Cole and O'Reilly, you can make the match without having him on TV, knowing he'll be back type thing. I'll say this, though. It doesn't look like it's going to be individually Cole and O'Reilly at this point. It looks to be a triple threat with Finn the more and more it plays out.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of thought that's what we were going to do. I kind of thought that's where we were going with it. And I think that'll be the better match as Cole O'Reilly and Finn. I think that match will be fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, but we also have Cross looming in the background too, of he's due for his next title shot. So is he part of that at the week of Mania, I'll call it.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see where we go with that. The other big thing, this will be a little shorter episode. We're moving into stuff, but we know Matt Riddle is champ. There's nothing really to talk about till we get into the next pay-per-view here. Fallout is coming out in like 3 weeks, I think, Fastlane rather. We have a new signing here in the old AEW, and it is one man who is known for a knockout. Alex Thomas says he thinks that Cross is going to run into Walter over Mania weekend. That match would be so sick.
I'd be so a big fan of that, Alex.
Well, it's Paul Wright. Paul Wright is in AEW now. He appears to be, based on this suit and tie here, either his gimmick is going to be that he's all business now, or he is strictly going to be on commentary. We did find out today also in the press release that was crammed in there in itty-bitty text. Kind of like the genie in Aladdin, like itty-bitty living space. We know that they're gonna have another show on Mondays now. So once the women's tournament is over, they're gonna move on to AEW Dark Elevation. Do I have that right? Is it Elevation?
Yep, that's correct. AEW Elevation coming Monday.
So the idea is AEW Elevation is for their like minor league, like their single A or double A, I guess, since they only have three divisions. And then AEW Dark will be for their triple A talent. And then the main show is for their main card talent. Do I have that correct, or am I misunderstanding something?
Oh, I don't have a goddamn clue. They've never went through and explained any of this. Do I feel, based on the name, Elevation would make sense to have more of the tryout type matches, the more not as crisp workers? I mean, from a name standpoint, it makes sense. You have put, what's that?
I have it flipped. Elevation is for their talent. Okay, it's here on the press release. Complementing AEW Dark on Tuesdays, AEW Dark Elevation will air on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern on AEW's YouTube channel. It'll showcase established and rising stars and top independent wrestlers within the industry competing against each other in the ring in pursuit of wins. It'll maintain continuity with AEW Dynamite, Dark, and pay-per-views and streaming events. With wins and losses will count. So it's just a second episode of Dark. Did the second show TV deal fall through or something?
Tony still says that second show on Turner is coming. So I'll be real honest with you. That is a lot of wrestling all of a sudden if that happens. You have a two-hour show on Wednesday. You have a two-hour show on Tuesday. Is this a one-hour show on Monday?
It is a one-hour show on Monday, yes.
So you're 5 hours already before you tack on another 90 minutes or 2 hours. And then you're talking about running 7 to 7.5 hours of new programming every week.
Paul Wright. Okay, thanks, Brian. I appreciate you. Yeah, they slipped in a tidbit about Paul Wright having his wrestling license, even though he's going to be on commentary for Elevation. So he will wrestle. I mean, duh, right? Like, he's a giant. Yeah, he doesn't have to take any bumps. Like, he's not going to have to take that many bumps. He's 48. His bump card is super full because he's been around since he was 20. What did we say earlier? 24 before we got on air?
He started wrestling, I think, at the power plant like 19. I mean, he was on the air in WCW in 94. That was 27 years ago at this point.
He's been around. I mean, yeah, he's been around for a long fucking time. Been around for a long, long time.
Look, good for him. If the guy's getting paid and he's happy, right? And his mind, he's healthy in the mind and this is what he wants to do, then good for him. There are times, though, with people like him, though, I worry about, and here's why. WWE had a lineup with like X movie deal, X show, this and that, right?
Right, right.
He wanted to still wrestle, though. He wanted to be part of the wrestling show, and he wasn't going to be there. So he moved on. Right.
So my question is, what are they going to do with him? And how does it benefit AEW? It obviously benefits Paul Wright because his career gets to stay and he gets to stay in the forefront of wrestling fans' minds because he will be on commentary once a week. We know this starting March, I believe it's 13th. Is that the day? March 15th. That's the second Monday of March. So he'll be that starts here in just 2 weeks. Actually, it's pretty dang fast. And that we know. I don't know what he does for them in ring. I know what he can do for them backstage, though. And so now you have Dustin back there. You have Dustin and Big Show back there, or Paul Wright. I mean, that is some pretty, and you have Matt Hardy too. So you have some super vets back there, some guys that really know a lot of the business and decades worth of the business. That's great for young talent. But what do they do? And Sting too. I mean, like that, like just think about that. AEW and their backstage now has these four guys, but if they're wrestling and they're taking spots from other guys and they're not working as agents backstage, aren't we just crowding the card?
I mean, I'm not kind of on the contrary to you. I don't expect for Big Show to be doing commentary live. I expect for me doing in a sound studio. I don't expect for him to be there. I think they'll have the camera set up just in a sound studio, as most companies have been doing lately. Ripping the audio over it, and that's how they're going to go about doing it. I don't see him being backstage as much as others may feel. If they bring him in for a spot on TV, fine. I wish, like you said, you'd accentuate the positives of he's been in the business for X amount of years. He can help the big guys, whether it's from the point of learning how to land on your big body, how to take care of your knees, those sort of things, right? I just don't think that's going to be his role there at all.
So what do you think his role is going to be?
I think he's going to be the on-air commentator. And I think from time to time, they'll have him in an angle or wrestling. I don't think he's going to have much say backstage. And I don't think he's really going to do much.
I mean, is that a bad thing?
Well, I'm not saying it's a bad or a good thing. For him, it's not a lot of work. But what I'm saying is, for those people who feel he's going to agent and do X, Y, and Z backstage to help everyone, I don't think that's why he's there.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens for sure. I'm interested to know where it goes. I think AEW is making some interesting moves that could be smart. Like if I'm bringing those guys. I'm using Sting, I'm using Big Show, I'm using these guys to my advantage to try to reestablish like your Wardlaws or Wardlow. I'm sorry, you try to get him to kind of learn how to work big man, because they don't have, like, other than Lance Archer, you don't really have a convincing big man there, and they need someone like a Big Show to show him how to work and be credible as a. I mean, it's not like this is a wrestling legend here. There's fucking four legends back there now, and that's, I'm sorry, there's more than that, because I'm not even counting Arn or Jake the Snake or Tully Blanchard. I mean, you have outstanding veterans back there.
Look, everybody's gonna have veterans and coaches and talent. Okay, I get your point.
Jerry Lynn, I forgot about him back there too.
Yeah, the whole fact of the matter is Big Show gonna be invested in the company to help these younger talent? Or is Paul Wright just taking a paycheck and is doing X, Y, and Z as part of his job? Either way, for him, it's not a bad thing. It's just, what is he going to do there?
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's something to, that is the thing, right? To see what happens.
I mean, does him reuniting with Jericho and the team at some point probably happen? I would assume so.
Right, because they do love doing those little nods and stuff that they like to do these payoffs to people that know what these wrestlers did in other companies.
Right.
So
do you feel you'll see Big Show next week or Paul Wright when Shaq makes his appearance? Shaq's coming, baby.
Shaq is coming. I just hope Shaq's better at I hope he's better with wrestling than he is at TNT in booth NBA basketball analysis, because he's kind of terrible at it.
Are we getting a face-to-face with Big Show and Paul Wright next week? That's what I want to know. Inquiring minds tell me you want to know.
I would say so.
Are we getting a WrestleMania 33 match that never happened?
At like All Out?
I don't care. I hope not.
Double or Nothing? Put it on Revolution. Or like
put it on full... Dark so I don't have to watch it.
I mean, you don't have to watch anything. No one makes you watch these things. You could just skip that match and just it'll be a gif. Brian K says he likes Jake Hager as a big. He's also a veteran. I just don't know how I feel about Jake Hager. I think he can work well. He worked really well tonight. But sometimes he's kind of boring. Also, Brandon Cutler literally exists just to sell his ass off and make guys look like $1 million, and he's real fucking good at it. Like Brandon Cutler is super dull and boring to me. Like I have no interest in him as a character. But whenever he works and he's like selling his ass off for these guys, I mean, he's real. I understand why they're paying him out. Like they're not just paying him because he's their friend. That's a lot of it. And he's kind of the perfect jobber. He made Hager look real good.
Look, everybody has a spot. You know, everybody has to fit an intricate role in the roster, the lineup and everything. Not everybody's going to be the star. So if you can do it well, you'll have a job for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't think there's anything else we really need to touch on tonight. I think that's pretty much it. A little bit slower week in wrestling. We can get through things here pretty quickly when there's no pay-per-views involved. Hopefully some things pick up. I know, unfortunately, I did not get a chance to watch Bloodsport, but I heard great things. I know you didn't watch it either. So we'll see what happens. You know, the thing I'm worried about, I will tell you this before we get out of here, is I do worry a little bit about Impact because they are losing people left and right.
You should be worried about Impact losing people left and right. You look at one flip of, hey, we get to work with AEW right now. Okay. But on the other side of it, it's our homegrown talent is leaving in droves right now.
Yep.
If we can't work with AEW, where are we going to benefit from this 12 months out? 16 months out when we may only have 6 or 7 contracted, let's just say highly paid guys right now. And then 10 others, yep. It should be a concern.
Yep.
And I almost forgot anything benefiting them long-term, Tony, with this relationship long-term for Impact. Do you think it's going to benefit them long-term?
They're hemorrhaging talent. So the benefit is if they keep that is that they can ask in New Japan and AEW to borrow some of their wrestlers that aren't getting TV time. I mean, at this point, Impact's losing people left and right. And oh my God, there was something I want to talk about that Tommy Dreamer said. I'm glad I brought up Impact. Dreamer apparently has said today on Busted Open Radio that actually Impact is not happy with the way that their talent is being treated by like, The Impact talent is not really happy with AEW, and some of that has to do with, I guess, the way Cage was booked as champion when he was champ. And I mean, we know this. You and I think talked on it on the podcast before. Cage didn't really want to be there. He was trying to move on to AEW. They blocked him from debuting at like a couple of times in the casino battle royales. So Impact, I guess, is uneasy about the partnership. So are they just they didn't like something Tony did on the paid ads?
You know, Dreamer said Cage's run as Impact World Champion disappointed big time. It devalued the title and made the title mean very little when he couldn't defend it as much at all. Cage was injured. He goes on to that, right? So he kind of takes a dig at Brian Cage, if we're being honest with you. That's what it
right. Sure. And like, we knew about the digs. We knew about the bad feelings that Impact had toward Cage and vice versa anyway. That's not a surprise.
He said the following about the ads. He said this week's ad was terrible as Khan wasn't promoting anyone or anything, nor was he building up any of his guys. Alludes to the guys and girls on Impact roster not being happy with them otherwise. They could hit back on their show. They wouldn't have a problem with it, but they won't, and they haven't.
Augie says, thanks for hanging out with us this whole show, by the way, brother. Augie says that they need Sammy Callahan to pop up in AEW.
Sure does. But
yes, Sammy Callahan should show up. We should get the Switchblade conspiracy back together. That has to be something Moxley wants, but who knows if Impact actually gives a damn. The benefit for this company, for Impact right now, with them losing talent, Taya, like Taya and the Rascals are pretty massive losses for Impact. Like, Taya is a really, and they knew she was gone. That's a big loss.
Yeah. But aside from talent for one second, right? Three very talented workers, right? People, workers, great. They sure. also covered about 17 minutes a week of your weekly television segment between the three right. of them. So that's you're talking, you're losing 1/8. Like, that's a lot of programming you're losing in that hour of just, okay, it's fine.
Yep.
One fall swoop. Ethan Page at the same time. One fall swoop, gone.
And Ethan Page, who knows what's going on? Somebody I know sent me a picture. I was like, oh, Ethan Page, I think I'm pretty sure is headed to whatever the fuck that company is called, NXT. And he sends me a picture. Ethan Page has a brand new shirt popping up. Like, that's just went on sale today. So who freaking knows what's going on with Ethan Page? Like, if you're losing all this talent going over to AEW or WWE, like, what do you do? What happens? I just don't know.
During this working relationship, right, and I can probably talk about this for a damn hour, you shouldn't have Tony signing Impact talent. They shouldn't be able to negotiate with AEW under this deal, right? But you know damn well it's happening. You know it's happening. So my question again forth becomes, okay, you're using the talent. When their deals are up, you're going to sign the talent. I think Impact needs to watch out.
Here's the thing, though. We will always say that, and Impact will never die because they're a cockroach, man. They just don't die.
Live betting odds right now have Impact going out of business at +100 compared to AEW only -100 because they are cockroaches. Yes, they will just last forever.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Impact. I do worry about them quite a bit, but c'est la vie, I guess. We'll see what happens. I did open up questions again. It's just been such a long time since I've done that. We will start doing questions again on the pod, guys. So if you have it, I will start posting it up on like Mondays, and you can leave your questions on my pinned tweet at Tony on Sports. We will ask you to leave us questions that we will answer at the end of the show. We just got one this week from my buddy Mags. He says, in your time as a pro wrestling fan, who has raised the prestige of a mid-card title the most? I will let you answer that question first and tell me why. So who has raised the
first
prestige?
First one that comes to my brain, like right off the top, boom, Macho Man Randy Savage with the Intercontinental title. That is the first one that comes up to my brain. Like, he went from holding that Intercontinental title, making it so important, and then transferring right to being world champion shortly after that. I thought he did a tremendous job with it. Bret Hart did a great job with the Intercontinental title. Very similar path, right? There's a lot of those wrestlers. Those are the two with the IC title that stick out to me. And then, not that he's a good person or a good wrestler, but Goldberg, I think, helped elevate the WCW US title during the undefeated streak and during the run.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm not as well versed in older wrestling, so for me, it's always going to be John Cena. It just is,
dude. It's not a bad answer, man. That's a really good one, though. Look what he did with the US title.
That's it exactly, because like, how often do you see a wrestler of his stature, right? How often do you see it happen where you got this guy and he just did everything? He did these open challenges, which Cody immediately copied with the TNT title, and not in a, let's talk shit about Cody. It's reality, and it was good reality.
Look, Cena did it twice too, Tone. He the first time he became U.S. champion, he put the spinner title on it, right, during his first run, and he helped elevate that U.S. title. Then again, when he did the Cena Open Challenges with the other one, he continued to elevate it. You're absolutely right. I mean, he did it twice.
And again, this is somebody that's an absolute Hall of Famer, one of the best wrestlers of all time. Whether you think he is technically or not, doesn't matter. One of the best wrestlers of all time. That's just true. He's not technically one of the best wrestlers of all time, but he was,
it's a whole package, right? pro wrestling, the whole package, right?
Right. So he'll always be one. Here's another one I like to add, and it's not because of his stature as a wrestler. It's just because of how he was able to sell the titles. Kevin Owens, I think, does a really fantastic job with mid-card titles. Whenever he has a mid-card title, he is all about it. He is the big, he loves it. He treats it like it is the top title. He was fantastic with the Intercontinental title. One of my favorite feuds in the last 10 years is him and Ambrose for that Intercontinental title. It was the best program going on. It was awesome. I think Owens is just great. I think he's like the ultimate mid-carder because he should be main event, but he's so damn good that if his feud's booked well, his mid-card feud is the main event.
Yeah, I agree with that comment below, by the way, with him elevating Carlito. I remember that feud, John Cena and Carlito with the U.S. title. And that was the first time I remember Cena finally getting that aggressive side. And it was so cool to see because you hadn't seen that in WWE yet. Cena starts getting hit by Carlito in a Singapore cane, and Carlito's heavy. And all of a sudden, Cena snaps during this program. And it gave this layer and this dimension to John Cena that really, he went from, okay, we've got a lot of stock in this guy now. He's doing this rat gimmick with the U.S. title to, ooh, we may have a player here.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing too is who do they elevate too? So if you go that way, then Cena is huge. Cena's a huge one. And you know what? Let's give another person their credit. Cody did an incredible job with the TNT title.
Who did he elevate?
It's not that he elevated anybody. He elevated that title and he went on for so long and held it for so long and put it on. And look, it's a newer title, but think about the newer titles that have been established throughout the last few years in different companies, right? Like Moose with the real TNA or TNA championship, a terrible, right? The New Japan US championship has mostly been a clusterfuck, which is awful because to me, that's the best belt looking belt in wrestling. I think the US
such
title.
Such a nice title. Yeah.
God, it's such a nice title. Is it the best looking title in wrestling? That's a topic for another day. But the U.S. that's a newer belt. It was supposed to be Kenny's belt and basically his bribery to stay over in New Japan. It didn't work. So they say. But you know what I'm saying? But take over the TNT title that Cody had and match after match, like every single week, the best match on the card while he was defending it in his open challenge, best match on the show was his match. He was putting on great matches. We saw Warhorse show up. Different indie talent.
I'll give you that part, okay? I did like the fact that they brought in indie talent or tryout types, whatever you want to look at it, right? And they were able to use that in the challenges. That was the coolest part to me. Now, I disagreed with you only because I think Cody needed to do that for about 6 more months before dropping the title.
Sure.
I don't think it elevated, the late Brody Lee at all winning that title. I think it kind of just cemented his place where he was going to be in AEW at that level.
Sure.
Did that title help Darby to an extent right now, but we won't know for 6 more months.
Yeah, but okay. I see where you're coming at. I don't know. It's a good question. Mid-card's the most fun to talk about. Like mid-card's always way more fun.
I never say mid-card per se. I'll just say secondary title. Yeah.
Yeah. Augie says Eddie Kingston's the fucking man.
It's funny, Augie. It's so funny you mention Eddie Kingston because I think I told Tony this last night. I've told a lot of people. I was watching Evolve and I was watching Kingston in Evolve and I was like, this is so crazy. He was under their umbrella and he didn't get signed. And I'm just watching him over and over again. And it's the same damn cat out there, just younger, a little more mobile, believe it or not. And I'm just like, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's really all we have to talk about on this week's episode. Is there anything you want to touch on before we get the hell out of here?
No, man, I think we're good. I'm looking forward to this road to WrestleMania. I'll leave it at that because they don't know what's on the undercard. No one knows for the most part. So it's kind of like you said earlier, you mentioned I don't know where they're going, and that's kind of cool. This has been intriguing from that standpoint. I'll say that.
Most years it sucks to not know where they're going. Okay.
Yeah.
Most years it really, really sucks to not know where they're going. But this year with COVID and not knowing what the situation is going to be like with fans and stuff like that, it's kind of fun. Randy Orton's 2003 to 2004 IC title run. That's another good one too. Yeah. Anytime you put a secondary title on a legend, it's probably going to be a good thing for the belt. That's just just the reality of it there. But anyway, guys, thanks for hanging out. Those of you that hung out here on Smart to Death, we appreciate you. If you haven't already, please go to Apple Podcast and leave a 5-star Frog Splash rating and review on Shooting the Sports Ish. We have Smart to Death. We have an NHL betting pod. Jake Senholz is doing a great job. He actually does picks too. Then he typically has really good nights. My buddy Stuart or Monotone Football over on Twitter, he is doing a parlay of the day every couple days, and his picks do really well too. So please check those out. I've been doing some stuff over on TikTok, some bets, some instant reactions. We have a lot of content coming out, soccer, MMA. Eventually we'll have to do a football off-season pod. We'll get there, but there's something for everybody here. So please, tell us you appreciate that with a 5-star rating and help us get more listeners. But anyway, that's it for Tony, Tom, I'm Tony. Check out shootingthesportsish.com. Here's a bumper. Goodbye and good night, bang.